and welcome to this week's episode of the Veg Grower Podcast. My name is Richard, and I want to inspire more people to grow their own food. And I do this by sharing exactly what I'm doing myself. Now, coming up this week, I have been looking through some of my plant feeds. I think I've got way too many. I've tackled a few jobs down on the allotment, and seedlings are leaving my kitchen. Chef Scott also has a lovely focaccia recipe. All that coming up today, so let's get into it and head out to the garden shed. Well, here I am in my shed. And in here, I seem to have a huge collection of plant feeds and fertilizers in different forms, in different styles. And I think having all these feeds and fertilizers can get very, very complicated. You only have to walk into a garden center and be greeted by millions of different boxes and knowing what each box does as to what you need to buy. And are they really needed? This is a question that's been playing on my mind a lot lately. And we had a discussion a few weeks ago, and it gave me a lot of things to think about. I'll put it like that. Now, the first question I guess we should ask is, why do we need all these feeds? What are they there for? And it's pretty simple, really. As the plants grow in the garden, they absorb nutrients and minerals from the soil. And this helps them to grow, become productive, produce veg, everything that we want these plants to do. So they're very, very important for the growth of our plants and in turn our veg. But when a plant dies, it decomposes and puts all those nutrients back into the soil so that the following year a plant can then come along and absorb them once again. This is where life in the soil is so important. Compost, of course, is what happens, what is created, and this is why composting is so important. But the trouble we have as vegetable gardeners is that when we take those veg that we have grown, we eat those ourselves, we absorb those nutrients, those minerals into our bodies. And that just means that there's less in the soil, and the soil over time gradually becomes depleted. It's quite a concern. Now, we can counteract this by adding compost, of course. And by adding compost, we add more of these nutrients into the soil. And this is why I say I compost everything. But at the same time, I'm eating some of my vegetables. So therefore, I'm taking away those nutrients. And I cannot produce enough compost on my home or on my allotment to really do everything that I need it to do. I believe that Charles Dowden actually doesn't use any plant feeds at all because he's actually able to produce plenty of compost. But he imports sheep manure, I believe, from a local farmer. I don't have that ability here, but it's something we are aiming to do. It certainly would make life easier and cheaper if we could just produce enough of this compost for ourselves. However, when it comes to plants in pots, it's extra important as well that we add extra feeds, extra nutrients to them as well, because they have a tendency for nutrients to get washed out and the plants rely on us for everything that they need being in that pot. And this is where our plant feeds and fertilizers all come into place. Now, all my plant feeds and fertilizers are organic, and I think that is a very, very important thing, because organic normally means natural, and ultimately that's what we want. We don't want to be adding chemicals to our soil. We don't want to be eating chemicals. We want everything to be as natural as possible. Now, I think the first place to start off with is with our liquid feeds, and we've got a few of these liquid feeds which basically to use we just pour into our watering can, and when we water our plants we add in. Of course, I do it on a Friday with what we call Feeding Friday. Nice and easy to remember, and certainly does help. Every Friday is Feeding Our Plants Day. So the first one that I have is a seaweed feed. Now, this is a feed that I use quite often. It's very good for improving or producing strong roots on our plants. And I particularly use this when our plants are in the seedling stage, when they're trying to produce some strong roots to get growing. I know somebody that actually adds a seaweed feed to every single time they water. Very weak, but every time they water, they add seaweed feed. Next, I have an ericaceous plant feed. Now, this is mostly used for my blueberries or my ericaceous plants, where we want them to stay on the acidic side. Is it completely necessary? I don't think so. I really don't think so. But I bought it because I thought it was important. Then we have a general all-purpose round feed. Well, actually, I have two of these, one from MV and one from Westlands called Boost. We're going to be trialing both of these to see what does best. And these are just a general all-round feed that just help our plants grow nice and strong, encourage a bit of flowering, encourage fruiting and everything that we want it to do, all in one bottle. But then we get into the tomato feeds. Now, tomato feeds, I always think, is wrongly named because the name suggests it's suitable for tomatoes. It's not. It's suitable for all fruiting plants. Strawberries, tomatoes, courgettes, raspberries, anything like that that produces fruits. These feeds encourage the more flowers and therefore more fruits. So although the label says tomato feed, it is just a general all-round feed. Now, we're going to get into the solid feeds. Now, these solid feeds, I think, are more useful for feeding the soil as opposed to feeding the plant. We sprinkle them onto the soil, they get absorbed into the ground, and then the plants will find these nutrients. They usually come in cardboard boxes, which I think is great when we buy them, but if you leave the feeds inside the box, inside a shed, they become quite damp and the box either deteriorates and the product on the inside has a tendency to absorb some of that moisture, clumps together and spoils. So what I do, as soon as I get them home, I decant them out of the cardboard boxes and I pop them into these plastic Tupperware containers. Now, the ones that I prefer to use, we can't seem to find as much of. And these are the type that are for juices. So they're designed to pour orange juice in to stay in your fridge. What I like about these is that I pour the feed into them. When I want to sprinkle the feed on the ground, I just pop the cap open and shake the feed around. That means my hands don't come in contact with the stuff and just makes it easier to share all this feed. Nice and simple, but I can't seem to find these plastic Tupperware containers for love nor money anymore. However, I've got quite a few of these feeds, as I'm sure you can imagine. I've got a feed specifically for potatoes, which I do use quite often. It's meant to help produce decent potatoes. I don't know whether it does or not, it's just something I've always used. I've got a garlic feed. Now, this is specifically for garlic. Again, I've always used it and I've had good results. Is it worth it? I don't know. Growmore. Now, Growmore is a general all-purpose feed, which I think is what we're aiming to use more and more of. It does come in organic form, which this is. And again, we sprinkle it around. It helps encourage good, strong plants. Blood, fish and bone. This promotes strong, healthy, rich foliage. We got bone meal, which helps for strong roots. So something like carrots or onions is probably what we're going to use these more for. Then we got some Epsom salts. Now, I've only ever used this once. I brought a box of it, but only used it once. And it is meant to encourage some green foliage on our plants. We've got mycorrhizal fungi. Now, this is actually quite useful. It creates a fungi in the soil, which helps the plants communicate to each other. It creates a network. It's quite good, actually. And this is more for feeding the soil and soil health. So, actually, this is a good one. Once it's in the soil, as long as there's roots in the soil or the soil is alive, you don't need to replace it. But I end up with so much of it that I try and use it quite often. Chicken manure. This is one I use quite often. Again, it's good for promoting strong, healthy plants, green plants particularly. I particularly like to use it with our leeks because it does seem to promote some really good, strong foliage and therefore decent leeks. Then we've got garden lime. Now, garden lime is technically not a feed, you could say, but It is an important thing to add to our brassica beds. It adjusts the soil pH to be more suitable for our brassicas. So it's very important. It's one that I would say is a definite feed that we have to have. Technically not a feed, but it's one that I would say we definitely have to have, especially when you consider our rain is acidic. So over time, our soil will turn acidic. This just brings it more into the alkaline, making it more suitable for broccoli, cabbages, etc., etc. So definitely one that we would have. Now, there are many, many more on the market too, other than what I've listed, but these are all the ones that I have. I don't think I need to use them all. Of course, I will use them up. And I think what we need to do is set up some tests to really see if it makes any difference. But the question I want to ask you is, what feeds or fertilizers do you use and why? And do you think it makes a difference? Do you use them all? Let me know. Email me, richard@veggrowpodcast.co.uk. Right, I'm going to head on down to the allotment. While I head down there, let's find out what's been happening in the supporters club this week. Well, I hope you are enjoying this podcast so far. If you are, then perhaps you would be good enough to please leave me a rating and review on your podcast provider. It only takes a few seconds, but it gives me some great feedback, and it also helps us to get discovered by new listeners. Now, Lynn has once again left us a review on Spotify, and she's actually recommending lemon verbena for the herbal tea bed that we built last week. And she also recommends a nursery by the name of Norfolk Herbs to get some very good herbs from as well. It's always good to hear of some good suppliers. But added to that, if you are really enjoying this podcast, then please consider becoming a member of our supporters club. For just £5 a month, you get extra behind the scenes podcasts and a collection of seeds sent to your door every month that you are a member. And this week, we've actually been sowing some thyme and carrots from this month's pack. But I've also received an email from a member who suggested that when I talk about the club, to put a bit more emphasis on the newsletter I send out with it too. It's a key part, and it helps this member with confidence in his sowing and growing. Now, as I said, each month I send out a collection of seeds, and in this pack I also include a newsletter, although the newsletter has lately become a bit more of a mini newspaper. And in it, I share how to grow the seeds that we have sent out, as well as a few tips and a list of jobs to do in that month. It's certainly something I really do enjoy making, and it seems to be quite well received as well. But more importantly, by becoming a supporting member, you also help keep this podcast running, which does really, really help. Right, well, let's get back to the gardening. Well, I'm here on the allotment now, and I've been quite lucky over this last week that I have managed to visit this allotment every evening on my way home from work. This is something that I try and do quite regularly as the evenings get lighter and the weather gets better. Reason I do it is I find just 30 minutes every day just doing a bit of weeding and watering when required just means I haven't got to pack it all in at the weekend and leaves the time for the weekend to tackle some of the bigger jobs. And all I'm really doing at the moment is getting the allotment ready for the growing season. This is going to be a phrase that I'm going to be using quite a bit. What I mean by that, it's still a little bit too early to plant much out, added to the fact that it is also incredibly wet. I'll get into that in just a moment. But what I'm doing instead is I am just running around with my hoe, clearing out any weeds. And what I do, I start in the same place every single day. So let's say that is bed one. I break my allotment down into raised beds. Bed one, I'll go through that on day one, run it through with a hoe. It might take quite a while to get on top of everything, but once it's done, I can then move on to bed two. Now, I may not get much done on bed two on that first day. That's okay, because on the second day, I will go back to bed one first of all, run through that with the hoe once again, which might only take a few seconds, and then I'll get on to bed two, which again It might take a bit longer, but it's cleared and I may even get onto bed three after that. Then on day three, few seconds on bed one, few seconds on bed two, more time spent on bed three, maybe even onto bed four. You get what I mean? I always start with bed one and run the hoe through that for a few seconds every day, and it just helps keep on top of the weeds. And it's certainly looking a lot better for it down here on our allotment. The soil is looking great, especially where we've added plenty of compost over the years. A couple of newer beds where we haven't added as much compost, a couple even don't have any compost at all added to it. Not so great. The clay soil that I'm on is very sticky and very claggy, making it very difficult to run the hoe through. This is one of the things we're focusing on this year, just making sure we get plenty of compost produced as we go on. But what I've really been focusing on this week is on the 17th of March, St. Patrick's Day, that's the day I usually plant out my potatoes. And my potatoes are going to be going into bed 1, 2 and 3. So I've really been making sure that those beds are completely clear of weeds, making sure they've been really, really well hoed. And I've added some potato fertilizer feed to the bed as well, just so that when we plant out our potatoes, they are plenty of nutrition, they are ready basically. Now you probably realise by the time this podcast comes out, it has been and gone the 17th of March, and you're probably expecting me to say that I planted out all my potatoes. I didn't. Now, the reason I've not planted out my potatoes, as I'm sure you can probably work out, is because of how wet our ground is. I've already said we're on a clay, claggy soil, and the clay claggy soil, when you get really down, is just still full of water. We have had a few dry days and the rain does seem to be easing off a little, but when it does come quite intensely. And my worry, of course, is that when I plant my potatoes, we tend to plant our potatoes about 20 centimetres deep, which when you dig down on one of my raised beds, I'm finding that it is wet down there. If I plop my potatoes into that, there's a good chance they will rot. So I'm holding off for a week. What I've actually had to do is I've just dug a hole in one of these beds, 20 centimetres deep, and I've been monitoring that every day just to see how much water is in it. What I found is that at the moment it's drying away, but when I first done it, the hole filled up with water quite rapidly. But that is now starting to drop down and starting to drop below this size of this hole. So I give it another week and I reckon our potatoes can go in. Of course, I'll let you know more about that next week. Good thing, of course, because these beds are cleared of weeds, they've got plenty of fertilizer added to them, they are going to be ready to go. Now, this is the same problem that I have with some of my onion sets or even my onions grown from seeds. Because it is just wet in the ground where they are to grow, it is going to be too wet to plant them out just yet. We had a question about this in our forum over the weekend too. Just waiting for it, just another week, and we'll see again to see just how dry it is to plant out our plants. Fingers crossed, it is going to pay off. I think it will. However, I've got to say, the allotment is looking really quite good at the moment. Now that we've been spending this half hour every day tending to the plot, it does look so much better for it. Very few weeds in sight, and it's just going to get better and better. Roll on some dry weather, that's all I've got to say. Right, I am going to head on home, and I will meet you back out in my garden at home. In the meantime, let's find out what Chef Scott has for us this week.
Hi, it's Scott here with this week's recipe. And it won't be long until we are picking asparagus. So I thought I'd share a recipe using it. And it is asparagus, tomato and feta focaccia. A lovely Italian bread that lends itself to being topped with homegrown veggies and cheese. And works well in this case, being topped with asparagus and feta. But as the year goes on, you could use things like courgettes or fennel, for example. I think the key to making good bread is patience and trusting in the process. This recipe works best in a kitchen mixer with a dough hook. But if you're making it by hand, reduce the amount of water by 50 millilitres. So, Let's not delay and head to the kitchen and hear how it's made. As usual, you can find this recipe and others on the veggrowerpodcast.co.uk or on my Instagram page, Seed to Table Plot 13, where you will find a little step-by-step video for this recipe, along with other gardening and food-related posts. This recipe should make 2 or 3 standard baking tray size loaves, and you will need 7 grams of dried yeast, 10 grams of caster sugar, 650 grams of strong bread flour, 30 millilitres of olive oil plus extra for lining the tray, 10 grams of salt, 500 millilitres of lukewarm water, and for the topping, 200 grams of asparagus, 200 grams of cherry tomatoes cut in half, and 200 grams of diced feta cheese. Method: start by adding all the ingredients to the machine's bowl and set the mixer going on slow, gradually increasing the speed over time to end up on the highest speed. Mix for about 15 to 20 minutes, or until when the dough is being mixed, it's coming away from the bowl and forming a ball and making a slapping noise. A good way of checking to see if the dough is ready is taking a bit of the dough and stretching it so it stretches thin and you can almost see through it. Now remove the dough from the bowl and oil the bowl. Then shape the dough into a ball and place it back into the bowl and cover with a cloth and prove for 1.5 hours. Now empty the dough out onto a work surface and split into two, and then oil 2 baking trays. And put the dough in each of the trays and rest for 10 to 25 minutes. Then using your hands, start to stretch and push the dough to fit the tray. Once this is done, rest for another 30 to 45 minutes. Now using your fingers, dimple the bread by pushing your fingers into the dough. Now add the toppings, pushing them into the bread dough as you go, and then bake in a preheated oven set at 190 degrees for 20 to 30 minutes. Allow to cool and enjoy. And that's it from me this week.
Well, I'm back at home now, and over this last week, the temperatures have actually improved, in particular in my greenhouse. In a greenhouse, it's mostly been over 10 degrees C, some days even over 25 degrees C, which is really what we want. And even our nighttime temperatures have only dipped down to about 8 degrees C at the most. So it's definitely the sort of temperatures that we want to see. But more importantly, these are the temperatures that we want to get our plants into, particularly my aubergines and my peppers. So over this last week, what I've been doing is moving my chilies, my aubergines, my peppers into the greenhouse here at home. I've had to add another plastic shelf just to make a bit more room for it because I'm rapidly running out of room. This plastic shelf is a 4-shelf unit, so there's plenty more space, but I filled it up already. And into that, we've added our aubergines, our peppers that were in the kitchen. We have lost quite a few to whitefly, unfortunately, but what we have got left, we will make the most of, and I think we should be okay. We will survive with what we have. It's all a learning curve, isn't it? Some years, I don't get any problem with pests. This year, we seem to have been having quite a few. Now, outside this week, I have managed a few minutes' work every morning before I've gone into work. Now, much like I spoke about when I visit the Elomen after work over this last week, before work I will spend 30 minutes to 1 hour in the garden, tending to a few plants, weeding, moving plants around, getting them pricked out, potted on, even sown, all these sort of things. And for me, it is just a great way to start the day, and it means that the garden looks better for it, and it doesn't feel like I'm having to squeeze everything in at the weekend. It's spreading it out. I'm actually doing more work throughout the week by doing it a few minutes every day. Some mornings we have had some beautiful sunshine and I've been outside enjoying that sunshine, working in the garden. Obviously I can't do anything too noisy, I don't want to upset the neighbours, but it has really set me up for the day, made me so much happier, and the garden looks all the better for it. All I've really been doing is just making sure we've got the weeds cleared and raked and hoed and that everything is in good order. There's so much going on in our garden at home at the moment that everything is great. The veggie pods are full of plants, the chard is growing well, our seedlings are growing well. It is just going brilliant. Now, even the seed of the month, the summer squash Zephyr F1, they are growing great at the moment. We've potted those up and they are growing really, really well. They're still in the kitchen at the moment, but they will soon go out into the greenhouse if this warm weather continues. Again, they need to be above 18°C, so they do need a bit more warmth. I want to remind you, of course, of VegPod 10 for a 10% discount from Premier Seeds Direct if you are looking to buy some new seeds. Also want to add, our chickens that we got a couple of weeks ago seem to have settled in really nicely too. They've really calmed down. They seem quite happy. They're still separated from our old flock, but both flocks seem to be settled down now and getting on quite well. I think over this next week we're going to start potting them together. Expects a bit of fighting, so I'm going to be around to make sure that doesn't happen. But I'll tell you more about that, of course, next week. I bring this up because I want to remind you about the competition we are running for the chance to win tickets to Gardener's World Spring Fair. There's a link in the show notes if you want to find out more about that. Right, it's time to head back into the podding shed and wrap up for this week. Well, that is it for this week. We are coming to the end of this podcast. I hope you have enjoyed it, but please do get in touch with what feeds and fertilisers you use and why you use them. It's always good to hear back from any listeners. Now, you can get in touch by emailing me, richard@theveggrowpodcast.co.uk. You can visit the website and leave a comment on the bottom of a blog post, but you can also leave us a voicemail as well, which always do go down well. You can find us on social media as well, and we even have a Facebook group. But before I go, please do rate and review, and please do consider becoming a supporting member as well. Well, that is it. Until next time. Please take care.